go. Boy, oh boy, a lot going on in the news. We'll get to Inslee, we'll get to the mask and all the other stuff that's going with it, Tom. But this is exciting because it seems like just yesterday we were doing Behind Enemy Lines. If you're new to the show, thanks a lot for joining the Tom and Curly Show. The way this will, first of all, let's just take care of a little bit of business. You ready? Let's dive into the news. Diving in! All right, here's what happens. We started this about 7 or 8 years ago where we would call somebody in the other market. We used to do it with newspaper guys. We'd get them on and realize they suck. They don't have that same sort of, you know, that same style. They don't have the it, right? So then we were calling other radio guys and we would have them on. Say we're going to be playing Oakland. We get the guy on from Oakland or whatever. And we wanted to see how they were preparing both mentally, physically, and emotionally for the loss that was about to come to them within That's about right. 72 hours. And then we got a little shaky last year because we'd call up. We didn't quite know how to, like, are we just come right at them like we're going to beat them? So a lot of times we would sort of throw ourselves at the mercy of another radio host, hoping that they weren't be too mean to our Seahawks. Right, Tom?
Yeah, but and that was after we were 12-4 last year.
I know.
We actually had a good, but it didn't feel that way.
It
felt like we were more like a 6-6.
Every Thursday we would do this. We're like, yeah. Oh, I don't know how you feel about this. So let's just, before we get this guy on, how are you feeling about Sunday? You okay?
I'm feeling okay.
Okay.
I think Indianapolis has a big question mark at the quarterback position, and that's the one thing that we don't have a question about.
Okay.
Our quarterback.
Okay. So I used to do sort of a John Facenda thing when introducing, so I thought I would steal something from ESPN's 30-30. If you don't know what it is, this is going to be lost on you. But you ready, Tom? Here we go.
I'm ready.
What if I told you the lab tech saw not one, but three babies? What if I told you the first and last great block that he made was in his mom's nether regions? What if I told you that being a good eater and wearing clothes that looked similar to his sister's clothes didn't bother him? And his last great athletic accomplishment came at the age of 9. And that forming a wiffle ball league, it was not just something you did because you were too short to play real sports. And that sometimes miracles happen, even in Turnbull. And then this is an uncomfortable
30 stories, 30 filmmakers, 30 years. ESPN's critically acclaimed 30 for 30, presented by Levi's, Tuesday at 8 p.m.
By the way, Derek Schultz joins us on the line now. And Derek Schultz is, by the way, the most famous triplet ever to come out of Turnbull, Connecticut. I spent an hour reading about you and your stupid sisters and your mom and everybody like, oh, he's a triplet. And then it's just like, this is like the biggest thing about you. Derek Schultz, you know that? The fact that your mom and your dad conceived you and you were the first one out. And this is, your whole life has made it into a 30-30 ESPN just right there on the Tom and Curly Show.
Must
Welcome.
Be so proud.
So proud. How are you?
You know, John and Tom, when you aren't born special like I was, I can understand the jealousy and all the spite that comes with that.
Yeah.
So I've learned in my 38 years on this earth to just understand that it's okay. People want to be you, but they just can't quite get there. They can't be the miracle that you were.
Oh, the miracle. All 5 feet, 7 inches of you. All right. So let's, first of all, welcome and thanks for doing the show. You and what's the name of it? Because I came in. Is this a radio station? What are you on? Like low frequency or something at the radio? Where are you working now, Schultz?
Yeah. So me and another guy here in town had a show for 9 years on Fox Sports Radio with an iHeart station, and we got let go kind of in 2020 amid the COVID and everything like that.
Yeah.
So after our non-compete came out, we relaunched it on something called ISC Sports Network, which is a regional TV network here in Indiana. And I also do other stuff with the Indianapolis Star, so I'm trying to just basically hold on to whatever fading relevance I have.
All right, good. Good to know. By the way, all that stuff from the 30-30, that is all true. That's all about your life. Growing up, you were a twin and all the other stuff that goes with it. And now here you are really reaching the zenith of everything to be on the Tom and Curley Show. We wanted to talk to you about the Colts and the Seahawks, find out how you're feeling. And Tom is now going to pepper you with five-part questions. Tom, go.
Yeah. No, we'll just start off. As you well know, in Indianapolis, your quarterback is probably the most polarizing player, or at least most polarizing quarterback in the league. He was the worst-rated quarterback, 32 out of 32 teams, when he was with Philadelphia. How does Indianapolis feel about Carson Wentz as your starting quarterback?
Yeah, it's weird because you're right. Last year, Tom, he was terrible. Now, the Eagles were terrible. His line was terrible. His receivers were terrible. Everything about that team was awful. So I don't think it's all Carson Wentz's fault that it went that way. But you look back early in his career, I mean, this guy was formerly the number two pick in the draft. In 2017, he was looking to have this unbelievable second season where he was an MVP candidate.
Yep.
And the Eagles were in line to win the division, and then he gets injured. And then the Eagles go on and win the Super Bowl without him. And then he comes back as a starter in 2018 and 2019 and performed well. Like, I wouldn't say that he was a great quarterback in those seasons, but certainly was probably in the upper half of quarterbacks in the league. So I think the Colts, with Frank Reich, who of course was Wentz's offensive coordinator in Philly, are optimistic that they can get him back to that 2017-19 level. Because you're right. I mean, he completely fell off the cliff last year.
Yeah. And do you think that you are a good team that's just a quarterback away from serious contention?
The roster's good. I don't think that really is in dispute, honestly. The problem for the Colts is that the roster is good in areas that aren't important. Like, they have a really good guard named Quentin Nelson. And it's like, a guard? Really? Like, who cares? Right? They have a really good punter. You know, like, it's some of these areas that are just kind of like, okay, you know, you need a quarterback. You need a pass rush. You need dynamic receivers. And the Colts, they don't know if they have those things because Wentz is a big question mark. They've got some young guys that they really like at defensive end, like Tomoko Touré. Ben Banigou, who they're kind of betting big on. Quiddy Pay was their first-round selection out of Michigan, who they're really high on. And at wide receiver with Michael Pittman, who's a second-year guy who had a nice rookie season at USC, they're hoping that he ascends to be kind of the number one wide receiver. But the weird thing about the Colts is that this is a good, deep roster. This is probably the deepest roster that they've had in almost a decade. You probably have to go back to the Peyton Manning teams. Problem is that at the positions that really matter, we just don't know what they're going to look like.
Yeah. And then on the flip side about Seattle, what do you make of the big Russell Wilson brouhaha in the offseason? Do you think that there's anything to that that could come back to haunt the Seahawks, or do you feel like that's just kind of like fluff and once he hits the field, he'll be the same old Russ?
By the way, hold on, Derek. Let me explain. You know, Tom uses the word brouhaha. That's French. He's just gotten back from France, so don't let that throw you.
2 weeks. Just the men.
Okay, don't stop. He's from a place called Turnbull. He doesn't know where France is. Go ahead, Derek. Go ahead.
I think that, you know, my attention span is pretty short, so I only picked one quarterback drama to focus on this offseason, so I chose Aaron Rodgers. So I didn't really pay a lot of attention to what was going on with Russell Wilson. You know, it's one of those things, guys, to me, once – the lights come on and the ball snapped and you're going. You know what I mean? Like, right. I think we obsess over these things and Hawks fans lose sleep. Or, oh, my God, like Russell Wilson mentally, where is he? Does he want to be here and all that? I think once the game begins, everything's going to be fine. The guy's been a winner his whole life. I can't imagine that attitude is going to change for him. So I would have, if I was a Seahawks fan, I wouldn't be the least bit concerned about Russell Wilson. I mean, if you guys want to trade quarterback situations, let me know.
No, thanks.
Derek, I've got a question from my son, Rye. By the way, second born, 10 and a half months apart. But I mean, yeah, they're a big deal triplet thing. All right, so here's the Rye said, find out from Schultz whether or not the religion that is shared between the quarterback now and the head coach will have any effect upon the two of them getting along and maybe even improving the Colts' win-loss record.
Yeah, look, there are a lot of connections beyond football between Frank Reich and Carson Wentz. Like, they're not they're not going outside in the, you know, up to Lake Michigan and baptizing people on the weekends or in the off season or anything like that. But you know, they make no bones about the fact that they're both men of faith, if you want to say that, and really, you know, hardcore Christians. That's who they are. That's what they base a lot of their identity on. So I do think the bond that those two had in Philadelphia had a lot to do with those shared beliefs and maybe philosophies and worldviews and all of that. But as far as, you know, like X's and O's and on the field stuff, I think really football still at the end of the day is football. So from a rapport and a relationship and a bond standpoint, I think those things are important. Between the lines, I'm not as sure how relevant that's really going to play or how much of a role that's going to play for those two guys.
I see. And what kind of rules COVID-wise is your stadium using? Is that much of a controversy? I just spent a week in Indiana as well, and I realized that they're not as pro-mask as other regions of the country, let's just put it that way.
They're pro-freedom.
Oh, no. Indiana, Indiana baby. Yeah. 65,000, no mask. For my cold, dead hands, we're going to put that vaccine. You know, it's whatever. I'm actually a Northeast transplant, so I've been here about 15 years, and there are some things that I really enjoy about Indiana. There are some things that that are very different about Indiana. And, you know, Indianapolis itself, just like most urban centers, our vaccine rate is, you know, it's not Seattle, it's not the Northeast, but it's better than in the rural communities. But Indiana, once you get out of the donut counties here, you know, cornfields and it bleeds red. And that's kind of how the governor and the state legislator have handled these things because that's really the governing bodies that control that now since the, you know, federal stuff has kind of taken a little bit of a step back in the last few months. Mm-hmm.
I've got one more question for you. How important is it just for the mental ability to face the rest of the season for a team that has not won an opening game since 2013? Did they really put a lot of pressure on their players to be, this is it, this is the turnaround. If we win this first one, it'll really put us in the right mindset.
Oh, it's huge. They've won one opener since 09.
Oh,
so, right. I mean, yeah, you have to go way, way back. Like, even Peyton Manning's last year, they went to Houston and they got absolutely curb stomped. They just got destroyed. Yeah. And it's been kind of a running joke here that you just expect the Colts to start 0-2, and then you figure out a way to try to kind of go on this run to make the playoffs afterwards because they've been so bad. But, you know, the good news is not the opponents because Seattle is formidable, and I think the Rams are going to be a good team too. But you at least get the first 2 weeks at home. So I think they're hopeful that they can, I mean, you know, worst case scenario, hopefully split those two. But even in a best case scenario, going 2-0 would be a great way to jumpstart the season because the schedule is front loaded. They got to go at Nashville against the defending AFC South champion Titans. They've got Baltimore on Monday Night Football in the first week in October. If Baltimore has any players that have any functioning knees left by the time that happens, it's going to be the first six games are going to tell us an awful lot about how this cold season is going to go. Because as excited as people are, people still think that Carson Wentz maybe can reach this level where he used to be when he was a young player. I think this also can go the other way because, you know, you talk about the COVID protocols. Carson Wentz is not vaccinated. All-pro linebacker Darius Leonard is not vaccinated. All-pro guard Quentin Nelson is not vaccinated. Pro Bowl center Ryan Kelly is not vaccinated. You know, the Colts have an issue when it comes to their best players are not vaccinated. Yeah. And look, I'm not here to legislate that and say, you know, argue it for, against, whatever. That's maybe a topic for a different show. But given the NFL's stringent COVID protocols for unvaccinated players, there's a lot of concern that those guys are going to miss games this year because they did not get the shot.
Wow. Wow, that's right. All right, let's do this. By the way, should we not let him take DK Metcalf, Tom? Should we, any player, can he take anybody he wants?
I think we can let him take anybody. He can even have Russell if he wants.
And by the way, did you notice that Schultz probably let it out of the bag that he already thinks the Seahawks are going to win? But here we go. Hit the music room. All right. Derek Schultz from Turnbull, Connecticut. You ready? Here's what's happening. You are going to be there when the Seahawks get off the bus. You've got a frying pan in your hand, but you are disguised as a hot dog vendor, and you're using sort of a New York accent.
Hot dogs here. Hot dogs. Get your hot dogs. Hot dogs.
So nobody's suspecting you, Derek Schultz. And that frying pan in your right hand, you're about to hit one of the Seahawks over the head. As they're getting out of the bus, you can slide. One Seahawk gets hit on the head. You then jump on a horse because it's the Colts. This happens to work out only once a year. And off you go with a semi-unconscious Seahawk on the back of that horse. You've taken that one Seahawk, and then you take his jersey and you rip it asunder. Asunder, that's apart. And you then place him in an Indiana Colts uniform. Who do you take, Derek Schultz, to play for you in order to change the outcome of the game?
You know, this fits perfectly because Trumbull, Connecticut, which you guys have mentioned several times, is located in the southwest corner of Connecticut, just up the road from New York City. So this actually fits really well into my New York area roots of smashing people on the knees with frying pans.
Yes.
Look, the problem is that if you hit, you'd have to hit DK Metcalf with like a Mack truck.
Okay. I don't have a Mack truck sound effect. Get to it. We're running out of time.
I'm taking out Russ. I'm taking out the quarterback, and I'm taking my chances with everything else. I mean, he makes so much of their offense go that's, I think, the really – I'm tempted to take Metcalf, but I would take Russ because of Wentz. But Metcalf, man, would be a big addition because the Colts have a lot of – they need a playmaker, and DK, absolutely. He's one of the best that there is.
All right. There he goes. And most people take DK or they take Russ. And later in the year, they weren't taking Russ as much, were they, Tom?
No, Russ started off like a house of fire, but he cooled off about halfway
through. He had a lot of frying pan belts in his head. All right, finally, Derek Schultz, what will be the final outcome of the game? Score.
I'm going to take, I miss the days when Seattle would play in the Eastern time zone and lose every time. Those days are over now. So I'll take the Seahawks with a last-minute field goal. I think the spread is 3.
Yeah.
So I think it's actually going to be end up being a push. 24-21 Seattle.
All right.
Oh, my God. We've never had anybody choose. We've never had anybody choose the Seahawks. They always, all homers, they go for their own. Wow. Derek Schultz, no love for the city that fired you from your job there. All right. Hey, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Thanks for being on. Tracy tells you how to look at traffic for us. Amazon is going to dangle in front of people a new perk. And a lot of corporations have this. I look to see Starbucks and McDonald's. They're all offering this for you. It's basically they're selling you the sleeves out of their vest. I don't think many people will go ahead and sign up for this. But the Wall Street Journal says, hey, guess what? If you work at Amazon, we'll now help pay for your bachelor's degree.
So you sniff at that offer. You think it'll have no movement.
Well, they need people to work there.
They do. Right. They've hired tons of thousands of workers, and they want more. Right. And they realize that $15 a minimum wage isn't enough, and so they need to come up with other ways to lure them. And one of the things is they say that they are. And again, this is this is marketing language too. But they're looking for aspirational employees. Oh, yeah. One of the things they're concerned about. It's one thing to get somebody to hire, find somebody to hire, but then to keep them. Well, one way to keep them, sort of like golden, handcuffs idea at the warehouse level, is to offer them college education. So as long as they are working there, they get credit toward a college degree. A lot of associate degrees they've already offered at the community college level. Now they're expanding it to 4-year colleges. But, I mean, there are restrictions. It's not like any university. It looks like a lot of online schools and specific things. Like, I think Arizona State is one of the places. It's not like you can go anywhere and everywhere and they'll pick up the dime. But it is something to assert. So that their employees will stick around longer, and I see that generally as a good thing. Your suspicion is that no one who's working in an Amazon warehouse has any interest in going to college, or
they're working in a warehouse and they can't get people, so they're adding something in there to try to sweeten the pot. Yeah. This reminds me the story of Henry Ford. Walks in on a Monday, big stack of orders. He turns to one of his foremen and says, "What's going on? Why aren't we getting these cars out there?" They said another group quit yesterday. And Henry Ford at that point slams his fist down and says, pay people $5 a day and send the word out across the United States. And the guy was gobsmacked. $5 a day? Are you kidding? Yes, it's an eight-hour workday. You're going to get off on Saturday. Tell everybody. Word spread across the United States, and people were coming from all over in order to work for Henry Ford. Why? Because the job prior to Henry Ford's $5 an hour was miserable. Americans had never experienced this before. Put this wrench on that bolt and turn it. Next one comes by. Put the wrench on the bolt and turn it. Turn it. Keep turning. The wrench keeps going by. Bolts keep going by. And the people are like, this is mind-numbing and horrible. I hate it. I can't stand it. And they'd quit. They're quitting in droves. When Henry Ford said $5, everybody wanted to work there. Why? Because they would put up with the drudgery and all the rest of stuff for the $5 a day. You have to do that. Amazon is going to have to say, you know what? Screw it. $25. We'll give you $25 a day or $25 an hour. That's going to get you $52,000 a year. I hope you're happy now. Here you go. You get to work in a warehouse. And then when I go ahead and buy some vitamins or something from Amazon, I'm not going to pay just whatever I pay. There's going to be an additional cost put on there in order for the stuff to be delivered on time. They're going to have to keep upping the ante, and they'll find that this thing is not enough. They offer you this because this gets a break from the government. You don't have, this is not income. It doesn't have to be taxed.
Yeah.
It's put off as an expense onto the business. They can help on a write-off. It has to be straight additional money to the person that could possibly think about working in the warehouse. $25 an hour.
Yeah. Well, good. In fact, that's the counter to this. Oh, yeah, if you're so generous, Amazon, you really want to lure people, why don't you just give them the money that would be spent on a college education and give them the employees the actual money? So, yeah. that would be ideal. This is for the employees. This is a version short of that to see if they can use it as a kind of lure. I also heard Aaron Mason this morning on our air talk about why he's sort of against this, even though he's in favor of education and all, is that he thinks if private companies move in to start promising this, that would be give the government hesitancy to get involved themselves. And being a kind of a Bernie supporter guy, I think Aaron likes the idea that government should pay for anyone who wants to go to college, and this kind of interferes with that. But short of that, which seems kind of utopian thinking, to me, short of that, I think it's great if people are. I think there are a lot of people, John, that would be willing to go to college if it was cheaper or more convenient or, you know, more easily handled. And maybe working in the warehouse would convince you that, yeah, maybe this isn't the end of the road. One of the interesting companies they mentioned this are the meatpacking industries. The meatpacking industries, you know, it makes sense. Walmart and Target, they're offering that. Meatpacking industry is doing the same, and they're extending it to dependents. Because they say, you know, there are a lot of people that work in meatpacking factories, and they're proud of what they do, but they think their kids ought to have more options than they did about ending up in meatpacking, and they're happy to support that. I think that seems all well and good if the companies really follow through and or the employees really follow through on this offer and really do get a college education or a degree or a trade school.
I'm going to ask Sean something. Sean, I'm coming downstairs.
Yeah.
How much would we have to pay you to quit the job you have now and work in Amazon at a warehouse?
At an Amazon warehouse for the rest of until I retire?
Well, whenever.
You would have to pay me $1 million.
Okay, thank you.
I usually sell myself short, so I decided to sell myself tall. Today.
I can't hear you. I went back upstairs.
I wasn't talking to you.
Tom, I'm ready. I was just downstairs talking to Sean.
Yeah, what do you have to say?
He said he wants $1 million to work.
$1 million bucks?
Yeah.
An hour, right?
I don't know. Who cares? I walked out of there.
I can hear you.
I can hear you, too. Tracy Taylor looking at traffic. All right. Hey, the SeaTac Alaska Airlines gets diverted because some people were not behaving themselves when the flight attendant said, put your mask up. Five people altogether. The thing stops off in Juneau, and the police step in. The number of people that have been getting in trouble on airplanes because the flight attendants tell them, put your mask on between sips and bites. It's like, ay. Well, anyway.
No, wait a minute. Are you taking the side of the disruptive passengers?
I'm just saying the ridiculousness of between sips and bites. That's the thing that normally pushes people over.
Well, apparently not in this group, because according to the Seattle Times article, they were part of a bigger group that got kicked off the plane before they even took off. And then they let like a handful of that group that were not acting boisterously. I'm guessing they were drunk. I don't know what else they might have been. But anyway, then the five, after they got, they kicked the other ones off the plane, five were allowed to get, on it. They fly in, and once they're in the air, then at least one of them starts all this belligerent activity and, you know, yelling and threatening crew members and guests and all, you know, other. So it's like, this was a bad group of people, you know, I mean, bad in terms of, you know, being boisterous and disruptive. And I don't think that they were set off by some overweening attendant.
No.
It sounds like they were in a mood to rumble.
Right. I got it. I'm just saying what I've noticed is but you hear the people when they're like, and we're going to ask you to put that mask on between bites and sips. You can hear people go, oh, God. Like it used to be,
so
you would get something to eat, you'd pay the $7 bucks for whatever, and then you take your mask off, and then you slowly enjoy it. You slowly, you're just sucking the air out of that Pepsi or that Canada Dry, and you're just slowly, because you're like, I don't want the mask back on, and as soon as this little bite of cheese goes away, I have to put the mask back on. Then they started saying, between bites and sips, put the mask back on. So
okay, well having just been on a lot of planes recently, I can speak where you normally you have the floor. And I'm gonna there wasn't a problem with that. There wasn't concern on the stewards' parts about it. Most people just did properly. They ate and they put, you know, I think that you can milk it if you want to, but most people, I think, were pretty respectful and they would eat their muffin or whatever and then they put the mask back on. And it wasn't so, the picture that you were painting earlier on might have been the case earlier on. Now, I think, at least given the, you know, the thousands of miles I just flew in the last 2 weeks. I think things have settled down. People seem to be having no problem with it. And if it's the one thing I do notice is not so much taking advantage of the eating and drinking business, but the masks under the nose. That's kind of like, I think, the one cheat that a lot of people do, because I gotta get it. So, and
by the way,
I didn't see a single
person. How full was your flight in France? Were you flying? Would you fly Air France?
It was packed. No, Air Icelandic. And it was packed. It was packed. I mean, everything, you know, the Paris Metro was packed. Everything is packed. So there are plenty of people flying right now. Yeah. I don't know how many flights have been, you know, cut back because of the pandemic. But there was no, you know, the TSA lines were long, like everyone was warning us. We got there early. But, yeah, it's busy, busy at the airports that I went through, at least.
Fly from Seattle to the Netherlands and come back. Round trip. Guess how much?
$400.
Stop.
No. Yes. No way.
Yep, $400. All right, Tracy, here we go.